Hey, ParaUnity followers. We know we all love the paranormal, but we know we also love a good book. The ParaUnity Podcast and Paranormality Radio are giving you a chance to win an amazing book for free. The Veritas Codex by our favorite paranormal author, Betsy Kulikowski.
A driven television personality makes an earth-shattering discovery. Is it Bigfoot? Aliens? Pity she can't remember. TV star Lauren Grayson approaches urban myths with a scientific eye. But with the show in trouble and her co-host insisting they go public with their relationship, she needs a huge win to stay on the air. She thinks she has it with the discovery of a possible alien corpse in Peru, until the government arrests her and destroys her evidence. Desperate for a final shot at redemption, Lauren and her team head to the Pacific Northwest to prove Bigfoot's existence. There, an encounter with a double-dealing diamond thief leads her into the heart of a volcano and to a startling connection between this quest and her South American find. But for some reason, Lauren is having trouble remembering what she learned. Will this startling breakthrough flip the channel to Lauren's deadliest episode? Will she get her sensational story on screen? Or will she and her team become an endangered species? The Veritas Codex is the first book in a riveting paranormal thriller series. If you like page-turning action, gutsy heroines, and brain-bending bombshells, then you'll love Lauren Grayson's breathtaking adventures.
So to enter to win a free signed copy of the Veritas Codex, you're going to text CODEX to 941-666-6678. Again, CODEX, C-O-D-E-X, to 941-666-6678. And the winners will be notified via text after April 11th.
This podcast is a proud member of the Paranormality Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the ParaUnity Podcast, part of the Paranormality Radio Network. Tonight, I'm taking over the lead and turning the tables on Brandon. Many of you have heard a few stories about him, but I wanted to open him up and fill us in on his over 14 years of paranormal investigating, Wiccan and Christian blessing rituals, and so much more. But we don't need much of an intro here, so let's just jump into it. Brandon, how are you doing tonight?
I am good, Xander. As always, good. It's good to see you.
Are you a little bit nervous about this one? Are you freaking out that I'm taking the lead on your podcast today?
You know, if I had any reason to be worried, you wouldn't already be on it.
Okay. All right. So don't freak out. Don't freak out too much. I'm not going to probe you too much, but I think I am going to try and get down to the nitty gritty. And of course, the first question I want to know, and I always find this to be one of the most interesting questions to ask any guest, is about your origin story. So how did you get involved in paranormal investigating? Like, take us back 14 and a half years to the day before you started paranormal investigating and what it was that actually got you interested and got you actively being a paranormal investigator.
My origin story. So like the day when I met the guy in the little automatic wheelchair with the bald head.
Exactly.
With all the mental telepathy powers.
Yeah.
No, what got me started in the paranormals, a lot like what a lot of other people say. I mean, the first time I ever had a paranormal experience, people have heard it on the show. We actually talked about a little bit on the Shadow Person episode. And actually, I sent the story to you to help you with your show. It was when I saw a shadow person when I was a child. So it was in our house, very nondescript. The thing showed up in our room several times. Luckily it never touched us. I mean, it could have gotten closer. I don't know. I usually had the blankets up over my head anyways, but it was huge. I mean, it was taller than the door, wider than the door, just blacker and black. Scared the shit out of us. So, sure. I mean, you have a 4-year-old brother or a brother that's 4 years older than you, and he's scared of it. That's like, okay, I'm over this.
Yeah. So, then you know something's up when the big brother can't handle it.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I'm bigger than he is, and he's not at that time. But yeah, so I mean, that's what really kind of got me started in it. I mean, you know, we used to stay up late watching the black and white horror movies back in the day, the Wolfman, Dracula, all that good stuff. And I mean, it was always something that kind of interests me. I mean, you know, I'm an 80s baby. So growing up watching Ghostbusters, that didn't help push it at all. And it's just, I don't know. It's just something cool. I mean, there is always kind of little weird odds and end things that never really made sense growing up in the different places I was or the houses we were at. And I mean, I don't know. I got the opportunity to join with a paranormal investigation team, like you said, about 14 years ago, a little over now. And got hooked and been doing it ever since.
And the first investigation that you ever did when you joined that paranormal investigation team, what was the very first investigation that you went on? What was your virgin experience of paranormal investigating? Who popped your cherry?
I popped my cherry on haunted dolls.
Okay. Tell me more.
So we were investigating a house in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, which, you know, you drive a half an hour and you're there in any direction. But we went into this house. The report was is that the people were, their kids were playing with people that weren't there, and they're having conversations with them, talking about how descriptive, like the full descriptions of them, what they're wearing, how they acted, what they like to play with. And they called us in to find out what was going on. We didn't get a whole lot of anything until we got into that back bedroom where the kids were. And we kept thinking we were hearing voices while we were there, but we couldn't really make anything out. And this is with our naked ears. We were trying to figure it out, kind of moving our way around the room. And it sounded like the voices and stuff were coming from the closet. We open up the door and there's a few of those old antique, like porcelain dolls sitting in there. And the little K2 meters and stuff just started going crazy.
Oh, wow.
So we sat down in the closet and started having an EVP session with these dolls. And we were getting full responses back. You know, they were talking about the 1920s. They were talking about, you know, tragedy in families with sicknesses and death and illnesses. And I was hooked after that.
I'm sure.
So needless to say, the family, from what I heard, got rid of them.
Okay.
The dolls, not the children.
Okay. And I was gonna say, let's kick the kids out.
Dolls are way better. We don't have to feed them. But no, it sounds like they got rid of the dolls and they didn't have any more problems in the house after that.
Okay. And do you know what they did with the dolls? Did you hear where the dolls went? Did they go to like a haunted object collector or?
No, Zach wasn't popular back then.
Okay. So they didn't end up in his museum. That's a pity.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be pretty creepy if I showed up there on a tour someday and there's a doll in there. It's like, oh, hi, I remember you.
I remember you. Yeah. But I mean, you know, if they didn't end up in Zach's museum, that means that those dolls, unless they ended up in like a landfill somewhere, those dolls are out there somewhere at the moment, maybe sitting in some sort of like an antique, you know, thrift store or God forbid in somebody else's home. Maybe it would be worth going back and revisiting that and just finding out exactly what those people did with those dolls. It might be a whole new like episode on the travel, a whole new TV show on the Travel Channel of you tracking down those evil dolls and seeing if you can find out what happened to them. That would be good.
That'd be a lot of boringness.
You running around the countryside trying to figure out where the dolls are. Okay, so like what you mentioned there, and it was something that I had planned to ask a little bit later, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it now. You mentioned that when you did your first investigation and you did your first EVP session and you went in there with like naked ears, and then later on you were using like the K2 meters and things like that. When it comes to paranormal investigating and me not having very much experience myself, or any experience myself, let's be honest, as a paranormal investigator,
When I see these TV shows, when I speak to you, when you show me that big box of tricks that you've got, there's a lot of tech. There's a lot of tech and a lot of equipment involved in paranormal investigating. So my question is it possible, in your experience, to be a paranormal investigator but not have any of that tech, to not use any equipment? And if it is possible, oh, yeah. how do you go about doing that? What do you do?
So the biggest thing you need in an investigation is your senses.
Okay.
You don't need all the fancy equipment. You don't have to spend the thousands of dollars. You know, obviously, if I had a sponsor for the show that sold the stuff, I'd tell you exactly different. But you don't need any of that. When I used to train people on how to do investigations, I wouldn't give them equipment. I would give them a piece of paper and a pen.
Okay.
And their entire job was to go through the investigation and write down what they feel. I feel a cold spot here. I feel uncomfortable here. It was at, 1301. I'm cold, or, well, that's a horrible time example, but it'd be like 2301. I guess that's a better one. anything that they noticed that wasn't right or didn't feel right, I would make them write it down. And there's a lot of people that don't use equipment when they go into these places. It's just solely for the experience. I mean, that's turning more into like kind of the urban X type people.
Sure.
Because I mean, it's so easily accessible to get any kind of equipment. I mean, if nothing else, get an audio recorder.
Okay.
Cause they're so invaluable on investigations, because there's so much of the stuff that you're going to have happen that you won't know until after you review the audio.
Okay.
So I recommend that. But you don't need it. I mean, you can do an investigation, or you can at least experience it without the stuff.
Okay. And when you refer to an audio recorder, are you referring to specifically catching EVPs?
Yeah. Okay. Well, not even just EVPs. So you can get EVPs with it. You can get footsteps. You can get voices, noises. One of the nice things is when you have your audio recorder going, you're in a room, you hear something in the house make a thud.
Mm.
Well, did you imagine that, or did it actually happen? Okay. Everything's still in place, but you can go back and you can check that. A lot of investigators do, like I said, they keep a piece of paper with them or something that they log times when they hear weird noises.
Okay.
So they can go back and verify that they actually heard it.
So, I mean, on average, I know this might be a difficult question to ask because each investigation might be slightly different and it might just depend on the size of the location or, whatever it might be. But on average, how long would you say an average investigation would take?
Well, you usually get there about 7-8 o'clock. To get your setup going, to try and kind of do a quick walkthrough to get a game plan of where you want to put your equipment out and stuff like that. And then from there, that usually takes a half hour, 45 minutes to get the setup. You kind of go through your run through with the team to make sure, okay, this is who's grouping up for what. This is who's going where first. Then you start doing it. And I would say, usually if it's a slow night where we're not getting a lot of evidence, not getting a lot of responses with things, we're usually done by around midnight or so.
But that's a hefty chunk of time. I mean, you're talking like 4 or 5 hours of investigating, yeah. Right?
Yep. And then if you do have a very active night, you're looking at 3 o'clock.
Sure. And the reason I asked that question is because one of the things that you mentioned about going through your audio recordings is, I imagine that is probably one of the most lengthy tasks involved in paranormal investigation is not actually the investigation itself, but all the work that has to happen once the investigation has ended and going through hours and hours of audio, and not just one person's audio, but everybody on the team. Everybody's going to have like a recorder with them. Let's just say then on an average of, let's say, a 4-hour investigation, how much time goes in? Like, I'm going to call it post-production time, because that's the terminology I'm used to. Review. Okay. How much time do you do in a review of the sounds and recordings and things that you've collected?
Sure. Well, it all depends on the equipment. So sure. So with your example, you said what, a 4-hour investigation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have 4 hours of, you know, per camera.
Yeah. That's
so if you have five cameras, that's 20 hours.
Yeah.
We usually set out three, we call them static record audio recorders, which are just audio recorders that we turn on and just leave sitting there all night. Okay. They just run continuously. And then we usually run two groups of people in the investigations. And each of those groups has an audio recorder. So that's another five audio recorders. So each of those, you know, you have to go through individually. So that's another 20 hours right there. So that's 40 hours. That's a full work week just of evidence to review, or at least data to review. And then you have any of your other specialty cameras, like your SLS camera, that may not run all night, but you know, you may use it an hour or 2 hours. There's, you know, a couple more.
Yeah. Sorry. So, what's an SLS camera?
The SLS camera. That's the camera that I forget what the technical term for it. It's what the SLS stands for. It's the one you see on TV that has little stick figures that pop up.
Ah, okay. It's the one that kind of maps out the human shape, or like the human form. Okay, gotcha. That one's really trendy. That one's really been trended. Like I used to before I canceled my TV subscription because I watch far too much TV. but I used to watch the Travel Channel and the History Channel just for hours and hours a day, which is what eventually led me to canceling my TV subscription because I get nothing else done. But that piece of equipment has been very, very trendy, you know, in paranormal investigation shows. And that kind of leads me to my next question of the sheer number of paranormal TV shows and paranormal investigation teams that are out there. Maybe it's just because I wasn't necessarily engaged with that type of content for a long time. You know, living in China, I didn't have access to it. But it seems to be something that really picked up in trend recently. Would you say that it's become more trendy, or it's become more accessible to the general public than it has been in the past?
Yeah.
Have you noticed it within your 14 years of experience that it's kind of, there's been an
upswing? Yeah, there's a lot more shows that handle the paranormal that are out now. I mean, people are constantly coming out with new shows. Sure. And the problem that you have with these shows is you can't trust them.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you actually find paranormal shows that actually have true evidence on there. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, the truest shows that are out there are the ones that are the boring ones, because you'll spend 5 hours in a place investigating and you'll get a couple 15 minute pockets of something going on, or 5 minute pockets of stuff going on, and that's it. The rest of the time you're sitting in the dark going, do you want to share anything? Are you here with us? You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's nothing glamorous like they show on TV. You don't have, you know, boxes exploding with stuff or flying across the room, or frequent, it does happen.
Very, very questionably frequent demonic possessions on every episode. I think we all know who I'm talking about.
Exactly. So I mean, that stuff does happen. We've been in a house where a picture flew off the wall and about hit one of our investigators in the back of the head. Wow. So I mean, it happens. It's just, it's not a half hour or hour long TV show worth. Most of the stuff you have that you find out happen, you don't even know what happened until afterwards. Because you'll be sitting there, you know, having a conversation with yourself, and you'll go back, you know, the next day when you're reviewing your evidence, and you'll be like, oh, is somebody here with me? And then it's like, I will eat you. You know, and you're just like, where was that last night?
I mean, what you mentioned there as well, with that, just kind of sitting there in the dark for hours and hours at a time, asking questions and not necessarily hearing a reply while you're there. It means what I'm understanding from that is that somebody who is engaged in paranormal investigating needs to have an actual legitimate interest in it, because it can get terribly boring very quickly. And if you're looking for that sensationalized TV version of paranormal investigating, you're kind of going to get very disappointed.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. So when it comes to the equipment, We've already, like, you know, I've already asked you, can you do an investigation without any equipment? And you've said, yes, that's possible. But let's just say somebody wanted to buy one piece of equipment. That's what they could afford. It's what their budget allowed for. What would you say would be the most useful piece of equipment that somebody could get? I know you've mentioned the audio already, which I know we can record on our phones and things like that, but let's add one more piece of equipment to that. What would you say is that other very useful bit of equipment that isn't going to break the bank? I think I know the answer.
What do you think?
I assume you're going to say the K2 meter, but that might just be because it's the only other one that I really know about.
either the K2 or the Spirit Box. You know, I hate to say it, that it's very audio driven, but they are. I mean, you think of it in the form of energy. So they have to expel so much energy to be able to do anything, correct?
Yeah.
To even be on our plane, exerting energy. So what's going to be easier, making a noise or making yourself show up in front of you?
So
it's a lot easier for them to communicate verbally or audibly, I guess would be the correct term. It's going to be a lot easier for them to do it that way as opposed to doing an apparition in front of you or going up and grabbing somebody or scratching them or any of that stuff.
So what would other than the audio recording, what would you say would be the next best useful piece of equipment? K2?
Yeah, like I said, either that or the Spirit Box.
Okay. The Spirit Box, that's the... It's the one that it cycles through different radio frequency.
Yep. Okay. You got it.
I'm not gonna, you know, in my experience of watching it on the TV shows, I've never seen one in real life. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a little bit suspicious about that because it's cycling through so many different radio frequencies. You're picking up tiny, tiny little bits of sound bites from other broadcasts, right? And if it's cycling through all these different frequencies, it's not only going through like your average AM, FM radio, where it's like a radio show that's being presented, but it's also going to be picking up on things like baby monitors. There's one in one room and there's one in another room. It would pick up on a baby monitor because those also operate in AM and FM frequencies. Mm-hmm. It would pick up on things like police scanners and like police radios or just like the security guards in the shopping mall next to you type of thing. So how do you know that piece of equipment is managing to connect with something of another realm and not just picking up? I mean, reasonably, you know, anything that we've broadcast with it since the origin of broadcasting, anything that's been broadcast over the airwaves technically still exists somewhere as a frequency. It might be out in deep space by now, but it also might be kind of, you know, bouncing around the planet. How can you be sure that what you're picking up is an actual communication from a spirit and not just some random frequency that is kind of making its way across the globe from a broadcast somewhere?
You can't.
You can't. So you just got to go on faith.
No, well, look at it this way. So you set up your recorder or your spirit box to either run AM or FM. You can either go forward through the channels or back through the channels if it's a 7. If it's an SB11, you can go both ways.
Okay.
However, each time it hits on a channel, so you've heard it, the
sound. Yeah.
Each one of those little sounds is a channel.
Yeah.
You're going to hear little blips and blurps of whatever's actually being broadcast for at that time. But you're talking a fraction of a second that you're going to hear that radio channel. So the responses you get on that, even if it's just a one word answer, like yes or no.
So it's a response to your question. Okay. Gotcha.
Right. So, cause you're asking questions, you're not just turning it on and just sitting there holding it like this, just doing nothing. You're asking questions. This is just a gateway that they can use to answer with. But even like a one word answer is going to stretch across 3 or 4 different channels in order to make that noise. So you would have to tell me that 4 different radio stations at the exact same time are saying the exact same word.
Or at least a piece of a word to make up a whole word. That's very unlikely.
And then when you get into sometimes when they actually use more than one word answers, you're thinking about it. They're running through 10, 12, 15 different channels fluidly to make an answer.
Okay. Okay. So this is something that you and I have spoken about very briefly, but I didn't kind of question you on it. But there is this etiquette amongst paranormal investigators. What are some big no-nos in paranormal investigating? Like, what are the things that like an innocent guy like myself might do or say on a paranormal investigation that would really piss off a paranormal investigating team?
Well, don't break the equipment.
Oh, sure. I mean,
don't be rude.
Okay.
Whenever we have people that come with us on investigations, we always want you to have an open mind. If you're a skeptic, fantastic. Keep that. Okay. But don't be stupid with it.
Okay.
So like, you know, if you're coming on investigation, so like my team, we have a public event coming up in March where we'll have 20 or so different people that don't investigate. They're going to come in. We're going to teach them about some of the equipment, how to use it. We're going to talk about some of the evidence we found, and then we're going to take them out and do an actual investigation with them.
That where sounds they're like using the equipment. That sounds cool. And I want
to get over here. If you're a skeptic, I'm all about it. I love it. But don't be stupid with it in the fact that, you know, you're going through it like, this isn't real. This isn't going to happen.
This is dumb.
This is stupid. It's like, dude, you paid $50 to come be here. Yeah. Shut up and enjoy it.
Yeah.
No, but just keep your mind open. Okay. I mean, I'm all for you being a skeptic. I'm a skeptic, but I've also seen and experienced things doing this. You can't explain it.
So immediately I'm going to hook onto that question. Tell me about that. Tell me about an experience that you've had that just gave you zero doubt that there is a spirit realm, there is a paranormal realm, and that you've had evidence of it. What is your biggest, meatiest piece of evidence that you've ever come across?
Okay, so on one of our investigations with my original team, one of the last ones we actually did, one of our founders was reaching that point because a lot of people in the paranormal field, you're going to go one of two ways. You're going to do it, get burned out and get out, or you're going to do it, get hooked and do it forever. Sure. Yeah. Sure. So he was reaching that point, that kind of that fork in the road thing, and he was just kind of getting burned out and tired. Wasn't really getting good evidence. I mean, we were kind of in a dry spell with really active places. We got into this house that this lady's husband had died, and she was pretty sure it was him that was in the house with her. He liked to joke around with her when he was living. Some of the reports that she was hearing was laughter. Also, the pots and pans, when she was washing them, were lifting up off the counter, moving over and dropping on the floor.
Okay. All right. That would be a sign. I would be like, I think my place is haunted. Yeah.
Yeah. So she didn't want us to do anything. She just wanted to see if we could identify who it was. Okay. So we get in there. We're doing the investigation. He was Native American in his background. I mean, I don't think he was full-blooded, but he was partial. I mean, he had some of the heritage, and he had some of them rainmakers in his house. You know, those big tubes that make the noise, and they were going off over in the house. Okay. The tubes weren't flipping, but the beans inside were moving. Sure.
Wow.
So not sure there. We were upstairs in one of the bedrooms and we were sitting on the bed talking to me and another investigator. We were looking forward at the wall in front of us, and we saw our reflections in the mirror there. You know, obviously you kind of see the shape of somebody in the dark sitting there in the mirror, and we're talking, trying to get something to happen. I mean, it's not like we were poking and prodding, but we were asking our normal questions. Yeah. There was a window off to our right. It'd be off to our left. On the wall is where the window was, but the curtains were pulled. There was no light coming in from it other than like the little strip up at the very top along the ceiling. Weren't getting responses. So when we turned the flashlight on to head out of the room, there's no mirror on that wall where we've been looking at the shadow of somebody sitting in front of us for the last half hour.
Wow.
So
there was a shadow in front of you.
There's two.
That is crazy.
And they were, it looked like us, but any light coming into the house would have been from this side, which would have cast it that way.
That way.
This would have had to have light behind us casting us forward. That's
crazy. So there was actually like a, for all intents and purposes, like a shadow being or an entity in front of you, two of them. Mm-hmm. And you thought it was your reflection, but it was. That's creepy. That wins.
Nope. It gets more.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay.
This is just to give you a fill in on what was happening with this.
All right. Okay.
So later on in the night, we're getting near the end. The doubter that I was talking about and I teamed up and we came back in the house. We were doing a session in the kitchen. He was getting frustrated because he wasn't experiencing anything in the house when he was in it. So we're standing in the kitchen. I have my back against the fridge, kind of leaning on it a little bit. He's over by the kitchen sink trying to get something to happen. And we're like, you know, he goes, if you want to let us know you're here, you're welcome to touch one of us. And I'm sitting here like, shit.
No, you're not.
No.
You're welcome to touch him.
Right. And he's like, well, you're okay with that, right? And I'm like, well, you already kind of offered, so I guess.
Sure.
And so literally shortly after that, I started feeling like somebody was going like this to my chest.
Oh, wow.
And we took a picture, and you can see my shirt indented on my chest where I felt it.
Wow. So, do you still have that photo today?
I don't. I wasn't in charge of the stuff when the team broke up. But so we asked it to do it harder, and it pushed hard enough to where it pushed me back into the fridge.
Wow. Okay.
And then he got mad because it wasn't happening to him.
Okay.
And so he goes, if you're that tough to be able to push him, what can you do to me? Next thing I know, our batteries go out and our flashlights, and he starts screaming. And so I grab him by the arm, take him out of the house, and he's scratched on his face, all the way down his face, down his neck, all the way down his chest.
My God.
Hey, ghouls. And guys, do you like to get spooky and stay spooky? Then check out our podcast, The Golden Ghouls. Each week, we talk about our favorite things, ghosts and the paranormal. Sound like a good time? Then give us a listen on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Goodbye.
So, I mean, okay, so, but is this the lady's husband? Did you, I mean, that's a pretty aggressive thing, but it sounds to me like the husband was getting a little bit pissed at being provoked. Like, if you're such a tough guy. Okay. So that is another question that I had kind of planned for later, but we've opened that door now. I've had people directly say it to me as well, that one of the ways that they go about doing their paranormal investigations or, you know, investigations of haunted objects and things like that, is that they aim to provoke the spirit into reaction. And again, in my very, very limited understanding of paranormal investigating, that word provoked, even in my opinion, I just went like, that really sounds like a bad idea. Because you're not entirely sure, number one, of exactly what you're engaging and interacting with there. I mean, is provocation, is provoking the spirit or the entity, is that a method that a paranormal investigator should be using to get the evidence, or would that be a paranormal investigating no-no?
That's a no-no.
I figured it might be.
So one last little note on that last story that I was telling you about that investigation. So when we did the reveal to her, we played some EVPs of voices we heard in it, and she started crying because it was her husband's voice. We were like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. She played a voicemail on her phone that he had left before he died, and the voice matched identically.
Wow. Okay. So zero doubt.
Yep. Yeah. But anyways, moving forward into your other question.
Yeah.
Provoking? No, don't do it. So I want people that are listening to this, that if they're planning on doing an investigation, especially you, don't provoke it. Think of these spirits or these entities as living things.
Yeah.
So if you were alive and people came to your house, do you want them coming and talking shit to you or pushing you around?
Of course not. Yeah, of course not. And it's something that we've seen again. I mean, I'm always very reluctant to bring up any names of big stars in the paranormal investigating TV show world. But there is that one certain paranormal investigator who's very well known, who seems to be very provocative in the way that they go about doing their paranormal investigations. And I mean, you know, do you is there any concern from legitimate paranormal investigators like yourself that maybe the wrong message is being sent by these TV shows, that it's creating a, number one, it's, you know, inviting people to go out and be provocative in the way that they do it, but also it's sensationalizing a lot of paranormal investigating when, like you said, it's usually 5 hours of sitting in the dark talking to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's much like my social life when I was younger, too. So,
it's my entire teenage years.
Yeah. No, but I mean, in all honesty, I love the shows that because they bring attention to the field and there's thoughts and premises and locations that we may not have really known about at first that are being brought to light. It's honestly ghost hunting or ghost investigating, whatever you want to call it, it is still somewhat taboo. I mean, you know, there's definitely parts of society that are all in favor of it. I mean, Facebook, you can find 50 billion and one different groups on there that are dealing with paranormal. Same with Instagram. You can go online and I mean, there's probably their own Wikipedia site that's nothing but paranormal out there. But there at the same time, you know, you get into your religions and, you know, they believe in ghosts or in reincarnation or anything like that, but you don't mess with it. I mean, look at China, for example. Yeah. They have their own beliefs on the dead and the afterlife, but they don't, they're not excited about you going and investigating it.
Yeah. True story.
So, I mean, it's weird.
It is. Yeah.
At the same time, though, I don't, as much as I like the shows being out there because they are opening up a lot of people's minds, at the same time, they are sensationalizing. My lights just flickered.
somebody just agreed with you.
I don't necessarily think they're doing it the right way. There's the point of paranormal investigations is to try and figure out answers. We're out there, you know, giving up our Friday nights or Saturday nights. You know, we're not at a pub having a Guinness or anything like that. We're sitting out in the middle of nowhere in the dark with like two or three people going, I wonder if something's going to happen tonight. We're doing it because we want answers. We love the fact that we don't have the answers and we're on the cutting edge of trying to figure it out. Any real investigative team isn't out there to become famous or to be on a TV show. There are teams that are out there and they do all the crazy stuff. You know, they wrangle demons and ride them bareback saddled or something. I don't even know. But then there's the teams that are out there that all they want to do is try and help people with issues in their house. You know, if something's going on that they can't sleep or they're not comfortable, you should feel safe in your own house. And if you're not, then something's wrong. So they want to help those people. They also want to help figure out what happens after you die. You know, do you move on? Are you stuck here? Is there something you have to accomplish or did you just get lost?
And is that, I'm sorry if this maybe seems like a bit of a basic question, but is that your reason for paranormal investigating, that you want to know what happens after death, or you want to know that there is a realm beyond this three-dimensional realm that we are existing in? Like, what is the question that you're looking to answer?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. all of the above.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it this way. With the way guys are in my family, I got like about another 20 years, 15 years to go, and I'm done. So,
don't say that.
So I want to find out as much as I can while I'm still here.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to guarantee which direction I'm going to head. let's just say I've never made the best choices in life up to this point. I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
I've studied, I don't know how many different religions to see what their thoughts were. I don't know what's going to happen. My biggest thing now is I want to know what's making stuff happen. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's stuff moving around in their house. Why? There's voices, there's footsteps on the ceilings. Why?
Mm. Why? Okay. So, I mean, with this idea that, I mean, you know, obviously we're all going to die eventually one day. And I think that's one of the hardest things about being a human is coming to terms with our own mortality. But my question for you then is, are you going to do a solid for paranormal investigating teams after you've moved on? Are you going to stick around and be that entity, be that spirit, be that ghost that does all that they can to communicate with the paranormal team to give them the evidence that they're looking for?
After I fuck with them for a while.
So you're going to mess with them a little bit first.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to haunt your own house? Are you going to go find another location?
No.
Are you going to find another location?
Kelly would kick my ass through the afterlife.
She'll find a way.
Yeah.
She'll find a way.
No, I have a very short list of a few people I have in mind, but.
Okay. Your hit list, your afterlife hit list.
It's like, no, I mean, I don't know. Cause I mean, it'd be awesome to be able to stick around, and yeah, I'd love to see an investigation from the other side.
Sure.
That makes sense. Because I've done so many,
bunch here. Of people wandering around in the dark. Yeah,
yeah. I want to see it. Knowing me, I see them doing that. It's like, oh, I got to play with this here just a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of like in our Men in Black episode, you know, where they're like, maybe we went too far. But yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have to mess with them. But at the same time, you know, if I end up going that direction. And it's as good as everybody says it is, or they think it is. Why would I want to leave it?
Why would you ever come back? Sure. Okay. So just going then, circling all the way back around to paranormal and equipment and technology. I've got a kind of a two-part question on this one. The first part is if you could own or have any piece of paranormal equipment, you know, like maybe the creme de la creme, the deluxe version of any piece of equipment. What would that piece of equipment be?
That's a tough one. The one that I currently have my eyes on, and if anybody wants to donate one to the show, you're welcome to. One of the teams out there now has made they modified their cell phone into an SLS camera. So literally, instead of carrying this big honking thing, you know, like literally the monitor on my SLS camera is literally about this big.
Okay.
And it's a full-size tablet. Wow. And then you have the camera attachment on the front, plus the handle, which is a tripod mount. So, I mean, you're hauling a lot of shit.
Yeah, it's heavy. A bit of weightlifting. Yeah.
But yeah, they have one that's literally this big. I want that.
Okay. All right. And is it something that's been produced, or is it just somebody's modified their own
modified it, but they're selling them that you can just plug your phone into it, and I want one.
What does something like that go for? What's the average price?
I think it's like $100.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not too bad. I was imagining it to be a lot more than that.
No, it's not bad. I mean, I really kind of have all the equipment I want
Now. When I was planning that question, I was like, you know, he's probably got all of the tricks, and he's got all of the bits that he needs. I don't, like, the listeners obviously haven't seen what I don't know if they've seen what I've seen. But you and I were talking a little bit after one of the recordings that we did. And you said, give me a second, I'll go get my box. And you know what you meant, where you keep all your paranormal stuff. I was honestly expecting you to come back with something maybe, you know, the size of like a biggish lunch box, you know, like a Tupperware. You came back with just an entire trunk, just filled with all sorts of gadgets and things like that. You know, I mean, it's got to be an expensive endeavor at buying all of this equipment and stuff. I mean, it's got to get kind of pricey eventually, right?
Yeah. I mean, that tote of equipment's probably sitting at about 4K right now.
Wow. Okay. So it isn't exactly like a cheap, I'll say hobby for lack of a better phrase, but it's not
So you can buy starter kits out there that are like 20, 30 bucks. You know, it'll come with, you know, an audio recorder. It'll come with a K2 meter. It'll have usually a spirit box in it, depending on which kind you get. Ghost Stop, I think they actually sell a kit. It even comes in a little black case. And then it has like the LED light, you know, that does all the little LED. The grid. There you go.
Yeah.
So you can buy kits like that that have everything you need to start up.
Okay. But again, just going back to what you said, like for the very novice first timer, you would say anything that records audio, so like a handheld recorder or a recorder on your phone, and the K2 meter or the Spirit Box, those would be like your ideal pick of at least the most fundamental equipment you could take with you.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I have my own little bits of equipment that I absolutely adore that I take everywhere. And I guess I should say too, inside my magical trunk, you know, the prices of that stuff isn't just the equipment. I have stones and gemstones and different pieces of protection that I carry with me on the investigations that are in that trunk also, that I've gotten from all over the country. I mean, I got some, I think they called it rattlesnake skin topaz that I got down in Phoenix at a specialty shop down there at one of the malls in Tempe. And the store was amazing, but yeah, they were selling different protection stones and stuff. And so a lot of places I went and bought stones or got different pieces of different things for protection or that, you know, like different crystals to help charge energy and stuff that you can set on your spirit box to help boost signals.
Okay.
So
you've actually almost anticipated what the next question was going to be. I was going to ask you about what it is you do before you start an investigation, if there's any type of like, I'll say ritual for lack of a better phrase, like ritual that you personally go through you know, protecting yourself. And then what do you do at the end of an investigation as well? Because I imagine there's some sort of rituals that you go through. And I say rituals without trying to make it sound like it's an occult, like there's not like a pentagram. There's not a pentagram on the floor and candles and sacrifices.
Well, that's like some of them.
Those only on the weekends. Your personal kind of rituals that you go through for either protecting yourself or to align yourself with the spirit realm and being open to receiving messages from, you know, and communication from there. What do you do?
Sure. So it depends. It depends on the location, depends on what the reports are. If it's something a little more aggressive that we're looking at, we're going to be dealing with, I usually do kind of a protection prayer just to kind of, you know, CYA before I go into the place. My big thing I like to do is I just kind of find a spot by myself and just sit down. I don't talk. I don't do anything. I don't try to, I just sit and close my eyes and I just center myself. I'm trying to get my energies in tune with the place.
Okay.
So that way I'm not trying to say that I'm opening myself up to say, hey, you know, come mess with me. But I want them to know I'm here to interact. I want to have interactions with you. I don't mean I want to be physical with you. I just want interactions. But I feel that by centering yourself with the location, getting a feel for it, you know, kind of syncing up with the energy of the place, I think it helps you get a clearer understanding of the place. And that's what I do everywhere I go. At first, I will just find a spot, whether it's somebody's house, it's a theater, whatever. I just kind of sit down and just, you know, just kind of zone out for a few minutes, get centered up. And then our team, what we do is when we go in, before we actually start doing the investigations, we'll get everything set up. Then I'll kind of disappear for a couple minutes, come back. And then we do a group introduction where we announce who we are, who each of us are, why we're there. And that, you know, obviously we're not here to hurt you. We're not here to make you leave. We're just here to interact with you, to find out about you. And you know, they're not required to interact with us. But, you know, if they want to, we strongly encourage it. And we're looking forward to it. That's what we're here for.
Like a no pressure, but it would be cool if, like, no pressure on you. But it would be cool if you gave us, like, a little sign that you know, we're here.
Yep. Okay. You're not required to show us anything, but we'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Nice. Sorry. You mentioned that you work with a team there. Now, when it comes to a paranormal investigating team, does everybody get an assigned role of something that they're meant to be doing whilst on that investigation? Like, do you have one person doing, let's say you're in charge of EVPs tonight. It's your job to wander around and use the recorders. You're going to do K2 meters.
Kind of.
Does everybody kind of have their job while they're on an investigation?
Kind of. So you have, we have two head people, they're co-directors. And then underneath them, they have the lead investigator. And then after that, we just have investigators. So what it is usually the reason why we have two directors is because that way we don't have one person in charge of everything.
Okay.
So that way any decision has to be ran by two people. It keeps it fair that way.
It reminds me of the two keys required to set off a nuclear bomb. Like, you don't have one person required to
exactly. turn
the
key.
It's not an executive decision. It requires the input of two people to make any decision. Okay.
Requires the input of two so they don't blow shit up. Yep.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, the directors kind of run the show. If one of them's not there, then the lead investigator steps up and assumes that. Then also what happens is we usually split into either sets of two or sets of three people. Usually a director's with one, and then a director's with another, or a director and a team lead, and then the rest of the investigators. Nobody's required to carry any certain equipment or anything. When we do our setup, we just kind of lay everything out on the table. And then when your group, it's time to go in, you pick out what you want to take and off you go.
Okay.
We do have a kind of a guide that we follow that has a list of, okay, at this time, we're going to be in this room. At this time, we're going to be in this room. Okay, at this time, we're going to do a full group where all of us are in there together to do a session. And so, I mean, we have a guideline of what we're doing. So you should kind of already know, okay, well, if we're going to do a spirit box session at this time in this room, probably should make sure we grab the stuff for that. And then, but I mean, no certain person's required to carry the one thing all night.
I find it interesting. I didn't know this, that it's quite as, I'm going to use the word hierarchical. Like there's an actual structure. You've got like two directors, you've got a lead investigator, you've got your other investigators underneath. So there is some sort of like an organizational kind of structure that's in place for investigations. It's not just everybody running around willy nilly trying to find some evidence. So there is actually some sort of structure there. I didn't know that before.
Yep. And you want to have that structure because if you just let everybody kind of run around crazy, you're going to contaminate everything.
Oh, of course.
Because, you know, if somebody's on the main floor and you're in the basement doing recording sessions and you hear footsteps above you.
That makes sense. Okay. That makes sense. I didn't think of it from that angle even. All right. So you told us about like that opening experience that you have where you kind of ground yourself. In fact, while you were talking about that and saying that you kind of like, you take a few moments to like center yourself quietly off to the side, what I kept thinking of while you were talking about that was that you're almost like aligning your vibration, you know, of the broadcast, the energy that you put out. You're kind of almost aligning it with the environment that you're about to go into.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. And I'm quite impressed with that because it couples the idea that we are also that we are spiritual beings, you know, that we give off a vibration, that we give off an energy, and that energy can resonate with the environment that we're in. So it's not just about finding voices on recorders and capturing them with your new fancy camera, but it's also about making sure that you're actually spiritually, mentally aligned with what you're doing as well. So there's kind of a almost like a spiritual side to paranormal investigating, that it's not all just skepticism and tech, that there is a spiritual aspect to it too. You've told us about that, but now I want to know what happens at the end of an investigation. So what do you do once the investigation's wrapped up?
Well, my goal is like I said, exactly what we're talking about with centering those vibrations. I would love to know that a little tiny piece of my vibration is left everywhere I've gone.
Okay.
So not saying that I'm going to haunt the place or anything like that.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, you've just left little pockets of places all over the country that you could.
I'm not Voldemort. I'm not leaving little horcruxes everywhere. But I like to think that by me doing that and doing my investigations there, that I don't want to say leaving a piece of myself, but like, leaving
an impression.
Leaving an impression of myself there. So if I ever do make it back, I'm welcomed.
Yeah. Or that day when you cross over and you bump into another spirit and they're going to be like, hey, I know you, we've met. Like you're kind of like getting like a fan club on the other side already.
Getting, I get more followers on that side of the realm than I do.
That's hilarious.
So we have 3,500 listeners here. Well, we got like 70,000 over on this side.
And then, okay. So about like haunted locations. I mean, I imagine that every paranormal investigator has that like one dream location that they would absolutely love to go and investigate somewhere in the world, whether it's in the States or, you know, Eastern Europe somewhere. If you could pick one place in the whole world that you were allowed to have free rein on an investigation for as long as you needed, what would be your dream destination to investigate? You're shaking your head at me. You're like, no, can't do it. Not going to do it.
I don't know. No, I mean, there's so many things I want to do. And there's great places in the United States. Sure. There's amazing places in Canada. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I'd probably have to go overseas.
Okay.
I would love to meet up with my friends Claire and Jack in the UK and check out some of their places. They're over kind of in that Forest Dean area.
Okay.
So to get like the ancient Ram's Head in and some of those places over there. I would love to meet up with my friend Philip up in Ireland and check out some of them places.
Okay.
Some of the stuff that his team does up there in Galway, it's amazing. And I'd love to be a part of that. I mean, it'd be fun to get over into China too.
Yeah. You should definitely come on over. Like it sounds to me like you kind of want to do like a global tour of just like paranormal destinations all the way around the world.
Yes,
right?
And no.
I've got another one you can add to your list. There's the Cape of Good Hope Castle in Cape Town in South Africa. And it was built in the 1600s and it is incredibly active apparently. Down to like, there's spirit animals. There's this black dog that exists there. There are soldiers that walk along the halls. It's a very, very active location. And then also in Cape Town is a place called Detainhuis, which in Afrikaans or in Dutch means the garden house. And the true story of what happened there is that on New Year's Eve, and we're talking like back in like 1700 and something, on New Year's Eve, there was a gathering, a party of, you know, the colony people were there. And some guy, I forget his name now, actually rode through the house on a horse, which, you know, of course, if you're getting drunk at a party, what better to do than get on your horse and ride through the party. But as he ran the horse out the front door, the horse kind of reared up and bucked up and he got decapitated by having his head just taken off by like an awning above him type of thing. And now apparently every New Year's, if you go there, you can see his horse and his, you know, headless body. He's a headless horseman running through this. And there's been a lot of reports of this happening. So I'm going to suggest you add Cape Town to your list there as well. Yeah.
Well, if I get over to Africa with my brother-in-law, because he's from Nigeria.
Okay.
Maybe we'll swing a little south. I doubt it right now. Right now, he thinks that
right
we need to.
Right now is not a good time. Okay.
I know. So tell me about it. I'm still in quarantine for another 2 days.
The opposite of that question then is there a well-known paranormal location that you would refuse to investigate because it's got such a bad reputation?
No, not because of the bad reputation. Waverly Hills.
All right.
It's so well known. Everybody knows about it, right?
Yeah.
I won't
just in case there's a listener out there who doesn't know what Waverly Hills is, what is Waverly Hills?
It's a sanatorium. So it's super haunted. You can go on any ghost show and they've done at least one episode there. I won't go.
Why?
And it's not because of what's in it. It's because of the shows. I try to. So one of the things I do is my team, they do like a full background on a location, all the history of it, what the reports are for haunting, stuff like that. I won't read it because I don't want to have any predispositions in my mind. I like to be completely, I like to be completely, completely open to what could be happening. I don't want any kind of pareidolia to set in and screw up anything. So like Waverly Hills, I won't go to. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to see the stuff in there, but I'm concerned that I've seen so much on TV. I've heard so much from other teams that have gone there and their experiences and what they've had happen that I won't be able to be open-minded to it. I'll be too busy going, well, okay, at this cell, they had this happen or this team had this happen that I'm going to like mentally force myself to see something there because other people have. And I just think it ruins it that way.
I think it also speaks a lot to the integrity that you have as an investigator for having for getting authentic readings and getting authentic data and not being in a position where you're, like you said, forcing yourself to see things that maybe aren't there. So I'm going to give you a little kudos, a little round of applause for that, for having some integrity as an investigator. And like you said, because it is such a popular location and it has been on almost every single, paranormal investigation TV show, that it would be hard not to arrive there with preconceived biases and expectations about what you should be experiencing while you're there. And then you said like that pareidolia where you kind of make connections that aren't necessarily there. So my final question for you then, before we wrap this up, and I mean, honestly, I could keep you here talking for hours and hours and hours. but the final question that I've got for you then is, we've spoken a little bit about, what somebody going into paranormal investigating for the first time, some tips that you have for equipment or the lack of equipment, just taking a paper and a pen. But speak to me as if I was going on a paranormal investigation for the first time. I've never done it before. And I contacted you and I said to you, Brandon, I want to do a paranormal investigation. I have zero experience. What should I do?
I was so tempted to come out and be like, do like the drill sergeant thing from Full Metal Jacket. You know, listen up, maggots. There's only two things that come from Texas. But no, I mean,
you're loving that visual of you doing this drill sergeant a little bit too much, I think.
Police Academy flashbacks.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's... The first thing I'd want you to do is I'd have you come and sit with me. We would get you aligned with your vibrations as well, because you're going to experience some things your first time out that, I mean, it's a strong likelihood you're going to experience things that you've never seen before, you've never witnessed or experienced or heard about. Well, maybe heard about, but that you haven't encountered or experienced before. And it's jarring at first. You know, that fight or flight symptom really comes into play. Even now, like I said, I've been doing this for, over 14 years. I still get into places that something happens and you're just kind of like, okay, stop for a second. I need to kind of connect myself. So like one of the last investigations I went on, I had been in there before, a couple times before, and I did a clearing at this house and it was just crazy. And every time we went there, it was something different. This is the one that I was telling you about where a picture flew off the wall and about hit a person. We were sitting in the living room and doing a session in there and just this wave of anger came over. And like, you just couldn't control it. You just like, all you wanted to do was just break shit and you wanted to hurt people and you didn't want to be there. You just were so I can't even explain it. And right after that feeling kind of hit its mark, I saw a shadow person in the dining room shoot across or run literally the full apparition of it, run into another room. And once it left, that feeling started to go away. And it's just like, I sat there and you could just feel like your adrenaline just pumping. And it's like trying to recenter yourself. So you're going to get into things that you don't know what's going to happen. Your goal is to stay calm as best you can and talk. You need to be constantly communicating with me so you know what's happening. So I know what's happening with you. So if you get into something you can't handle, you tell me and we'll get you out.
Yeah. Okay.
If there's something going on with you, like if you feel like you're being touched or you feel like something is trying to communicate with you, tell me. So we stay in that room so we can figure out what's going on. One of the big things is be open and be be communicative, because I don't know what you're feeling. And in the same side, I will tell you what I'm feeling.
Okay.
So, because, you know, going into a place like this, it sounds crazy, but, you know, we're a team, you know, we have to get through everything together. So my goal is to make sure that you get through everything. And I want you to, you know, cover in sixes. You know what I mean? When I say that.
Covered in sixes sounds like the work of the devil. What is
no.
like six, six, six. So, I'm like, so, I don't want to be covered in 60.
It's a military. It's a police military. So you're watching your six. So, you know.
Okay.
You're watching behind. Covering each other's back.
Okay. Gotcha.
Covering the sixes, not the.
Okay.
Not the six.
I heard covered in sixes. I was like, that sounds a lot like the Omen.
Yeah. So that's my big thing with it is, then it's like, let's go in there. I just want you to sit with me. We're going to kind of meditate on the place, clear your mind. Anything that's happening outside of this with your personal life needs to go. You need to check it at the door, because you want your mind completely clear when you get in here, because I don't want to give this a Disneyland vibe, but it's a magical place. You know, there isn't answers to why this happens or what's going on. And that's why we're here. We're trying to figure out why it's happening and what's going on. So why would you want to dampen that opportunity by worrying about the argument you had with your girlfriend right before you left the house? Or, you know, why are you going to sit there and be mad that your dog took a shit on the floor right before you left? Yeah, you know, just let it go. Yeah. Be fully immersive in what's going on in front of you.
And just that other thing that you said there about cover your sixes, about having somebody at your back. I mean, the message that I get from that as well is that you do not go on a paranormal investigation by yourself. You have to have a team with you, or you have to have at least one other person with you, because you're there to look out for each other.
Yeah, I've never done an investigation with anything less than two people. I've tried to go to places before and by myself, and it shit just starts to go downhill too quickly.
Okay. In what way?
In any way. So if you have, so I don't know about all the other investigators out there, but like when I go into a place and stuff starts to happen, your anxiety starts to kind of increase a little bit. Well, I think that's part of just being in tune with the place, is you're feeding off that energy that's starting to surge, you know, because it's going to suck energy to be able to display something.
Sure.
Well, until it shows what it is, you don't know what it is.
Okay.
So it could be anything. And the problem is with negative spirits or entities or creatures or djinns or you know, whatever else you want to call them. If you start showing that crack, then they're going to exploit it. And they'll just keep making it bigger and bigger. And then you're going to lose control of the situation. And if it is something negative or evil that you're dealing with, you're toast.
You're on your own. Yeah.
You're on your own. There's nobody there to pull you out and to help you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, one of the things with the police department is we waited for backup before we went into like a hostage situation or anything like that. Or if we knew that there's somebody barricaded, we had somebody else with us before we busted through that door.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is really for your own safety that you shouldn't go in there, and you shouldn't be kind of like renegade trying to be the hero and going.
And I mean, I know a lot of people do it and they're successful with it, but I mean, you know, you find this much information on your own.
Yeah.
If you take two people in, you're going to find this much information. Yeah. And then think of how much more valuable your evidence is if you found it and they found it and you can collaborate it together.
I was just, that's one of the other things I was thinking about as well, is that if you went on an investigation by yourself, and let's just say you got like the platinum, the best piece of paranormal evidence that anybody's ever collected, there was nobody else there to back you up and say, like, any, you know, it would bring a lot of doubt around the piece of evidence that you'd brought, because nobody else is there to vouch that it's authentic. They could have been, you know, like you were by yourself. Nobody else there witnessed it. So you have to have a witness to corroborate your evidence, type of thing.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time anymore, nowadays, anybody can make anything on the
computer. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to leave us 5 stars and give us a review. It helps us to get the word out about the show, and we want to hear your feedback to help make the show better. And of course, I want to thank you, Brandon, for making your knowledge and your experience available to us. You know, there's a lot that we can learn from you. I think, you know, I'm very humbled by the fact that you've got 14 plus years of paranormal experience, because that shows, I think, on your part, a lot of dedication to being able to find the answers. And it also solidifies, for me, it solidifies, you know, it takes that sensationalism out of all the paranormal investigation shows that I've seen, and it makes it kind of something a lot more real world. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us today.
Absolutely. We just barely even scratched the surface.
We could be here for hours and hours and hours. We'll have to do a follow-up show sometime with all the questions that I'm going to think of after I listen to the show and been like, damn it, I should have asked that.
I know. My message box is going to blow up for the next couple hours, I'm sure.
Right.
Well, if you're an Android listener, you can follow us on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, so you never miss an episode. Remember, if you like the show, tell a friend. And if you want to help out the show, or if you want more ParaUnity, please join us on our Patreon page. That's the only place where you'll be able to see the video stream from our show and get other great perks as well. But my name's Brandon.
And I'm Xander, and you have been listening to the best place to bring our paranormal teams a little closer together.
The ParaUnity Podcast on the Paranormality Radio Network.